The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I don't think we are in a bubble situation, Neil, because the demand is organic. It's very, very real. But I do think that we're in a situation where that if we don't bring prices back into control, we're going to have a problem on our hands.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was the National Association of Home Builders CEO Jerry Howard. He was on Fox Business talking about whether or not there is a housing bustle. It's going to be a long day for me, I'm going to tell you right now. A housing bubble. I got such little sleep last night. I do not know why, but it was one of those weird nights. Boy, I've been going through through a lot lately. You know, it's been crazy. My back, you know, I injured my back a couple weeks ago. It was the weirdest thing. I was getting out of this chair. I did nothing but stand up. I was up and out of this chair probably 10 times during the broadcast, and that had to be helped to my car. It was the weirdest thing in the world, but last night was a rough night trying to sleep. But that's okay, right? I often offer up the sufferings of the day. I mean, today we're asked in a special way to do penance, right? To remember our Lord's Passion. And if you are fasting for the speaker, as the great Archbishop of San Francisco has asked for, Archbishop Corleone has asked many people to pray a rosary today and to fast for Speaker of the House Pelosi, you can always join Father Rocky tonight at 7 p.m., pray the rosary with him as well. But you can also sacrifice the pains that you're enduring right now, that arthritis, that migraine that you have, the traffic you're in, maybe the lack of sleep like me. But bear with me today as I try to make my way through this broadcast. We opened with a clip because I'm fascinated by the housing market. I mean, it has been off the charts, hasn't it? I don't know whether you've sold your home. I know a lot of people are putting their homes up on the market and they're throwing ridiculous prices up there just in an attempt to see what happens. Kind of fishing, right? They're throwing some bait in the water. And guess what? Their places are selling. They really are. But how long will it persist? You know, towards the end of the fall, things always slow down towards the winter. Is there a housing bubble? Is it too late for you to get in? Are you getting ready to sell the house? You know, we'll take a look at that coming up. Peter Grandage is going to join us in a few minutes. And, of course, you're welcome to dial in anytime. Here's the number. Put this in your speed dial and feel free to join the conversation. It's 888-914-9149. And I do want to hear your angel stories a little bit later. Today's a great feast of, tomorrow's the feast of the guardian angels. And I thought, you know what? I had such a beautiful angelic encounter. My angel saved me, and I actually met him. I met my angel. I got to tell you this story coming up a little later. It's a pretty cool story. St. Faustina saw her angels, and, you know, we know many people have these angelic encounters. Sometimes you don't recognize them. You know, they often come as mysterious messengers, but we'll look at that coming up. Let me tell you what's happening in the country. I'll call you to continue to pray for all that unfolds in the nation. School board meetings across the country have been very contentious lately. High on the agenda are these COVID-19 policies, right? They're teaching gender theory and critical race theory to your kids. And I say to my wife all the time, I said, oh my gosh, I'm so glad our kids are out of school. You have no idea. Patrick Alog, who's my producer, he's single and he's saying, thank God, you know, he doesn't have kids right now, because man, what an added burden for you, the parent, who've got to make sure that your kids are well-formed and they're not being indoctrinated, polluted, you know, warped by some of this wacky teaching. Just this week, there was a mother in Virginia who read to the school board from a couple of books that her kids took out from the school library. And guess what? They were graphic description of sexual topics, including, now listen, I'm sorry, I don't want to be too crass here, I don't want to be too revealing either. These came out of the school library, right? Kids' books. Graphic descriptions of sexual activities, including pedophilia. I mean, a child's innocence should not be lost. A child's innocence should not be be challenged by this type of stuff, and that's exactly what happened. So let me share with you. You can hear some of the ruckus. You can hear some of the contention, if you will. This report comes from CBS News.
School board officials are calling for help tonight. Following increasingly violent incidents like this in Minnesota, a man complimenting school board members during a debate over masks, who's then charged by an unmasked man. Writing to President Biden, the National School Boards Association asked for help investigating the violent incidents and suggested the FBI monitor threats to board members, likening these heinous actions to domestic terrorism.
The impact of the pandemic on public schools is creating all this heightened rhetoric around the nation. And unfortunately, in some places, it's leading to threats and actual incidents of violence.
The White House responding today to the school board letter, saying that they're looking at what more the administration can do.
And obviously, these threats to school board members is horrible. They're doing their jobs.
Obviously, local police are still going to have a presence at these very contentious, sometimes violent school board meetings. But what school officials nationwide want is for the feds to provide some level of intel that will give them some sense of what kind of threats are heading their way.
Yeah, I hear the White House spokesperson defending the school boards, right? One of the board members in that story I was telling you about the mother who took the books from the library and read about the pedophilia and read it out loud. When you hear it out loud, it's incredibly disturbing, right? These board members are all standing there. One of the board members told the mother to stop. You know why? Yeah, he said, stop, because there are children at this meeting. There's children at this meeting? It's okay for the kids to take those books out and be exposed to them, but you don't want to read because there are kids at the meeting. This is the kind of thing that led the National School Board Association to write a letter to President Biden asking him for federal help. According to the Wall Street Journal, the association claims more than 20 instances of threats of harassment and acts of intimidation towards these school board members and students and district staff and leaders. And, of course, we don't want to intimidate. We don't want to threaten. You don't want to harass anyone. But you also have a right as a parent to say, hey, look, this is wrong, and I don't want my child exposed to this, right? And you, who have been given charge, been given this responsibility, you are held accountable. You know, the association compared the threats to domestic terrorism, to hate crimes, they said local law enforcement in some parts of the country need federal assistance in handling and preventing threats because they're becoming more common. Got a simple solution. Get the porn and get the pedophilia and get this stuff, out away from these kids, and parents aren't going to be upset, Protect the innocence of children. Now, this comes, of course, after the gubernatorial candidate, Terry McAuliffe, said that parents have no business knowing what schools are teaching. I wouldn't vote for that guy just on that statement alone, right? And I'm not endorsing a candidate here. I want to make sure you understand where I'm coming from. But is that not the most ridiculous thing you have ever heard? Isn't that the most ridiculous thing? Parents have no business knowing what schools are teaching. What are you talking about? What planet are you from? That is absolutely ridiculous. That's just ridiculous. It's like, I got to pass a bill. What's in it? Well, we got to pass it before you can read it, right? Or, hey, this $3.5 trillion, it's not going to cost anything. I mean, does that make any sense? Do any of those things make sense to you? No. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, you need to pray for him. I just heard before walking in the studio here, he tested positive for COVID-19. So the justices are apparently tested weekly, but they had to be tested again later in the week because Justice Amy Coney Barrett, because of her investiture ceremony, which took place today. Kavanaugh is going to be sitting that out. My understanding is Justice Kavanaugh has been vaccinated. So very mild symptoms of anything at all. Meanwhile, the court yesterday, they decided to take up a religious freedom case from Boston. Apparently, the city, I'll tell you, this is a weird story. I wasn't going to share this just because I don't like this story, but I thought, we'll talk about it. All right, apparently the city hall flies all kinds of different flags in front of their building, all kinds of groups, and they've waved flags for the LGBTQ and for transgender and all kinds of religious groups. However, there was a man by the name of Harold Shurtleff. He approached the city hall and asked them. He approached with a white flag and a red cross and a blue square, and city hall refused to fly it. And Shurtleff sued the city, basically claiming this violated his religious freedom. And later on, the city came up with kind of written regulations that forbid displaying flags that are deemed to be, quote, inappropriate or offensive in nature or supporting discrimination, prejudice, or religious movements. This was a Christian flag. Listen to this report. This comes, this was before the announcement that the Supreme Court would actually take up this case. Listen.
Well, the First Circuit definitely got this wrong. First of all, the city of Boston has designated its flagpoles a public forum, and that means that we have free speech rights. The city can designate any of its property to be a public forum. And then the city went as far as to invite all of the diverse communities of Boston to apply to raise their flags there. And over 12 years and 284 flags, the city said yes. The city never said no until my client, Camp Constitution, asked to raise the Christian flag. And the city official who said no didn't care what was on the flag. In fact, he testified under oath that the only reason he denied it was because it was called a Christian flag. If my client had simply called it the Camp Constitution flag, he said he would have approved it. So clearly, the city of Boston is not being consistent is the best thing I can say about it. But more than that, the idea that this is somehow Boston speaking when it invites all of these outside groups to raise their flags and says yes to all of them until our client applies. This isn't the city speaking. This is a public forum for the speech of all these various organizations. And Boston was quite happy to host all of these organizations until our client applied. That's unconstitutional discrimination against the Christian viewpoint of our client.
Yeah, well, I sit back here and everybody wants to be tolerant, right? Everybody's got to be all inclusive. We have to tolerate and accept everybody and everybody's except for Christianity, right? Yeah, except for a Christian perspective. Now, what the Catholic Church teaches, what followers of Christ believe, today it's just not accepted. It's not tolerated. It's such a double standard. Well, one last story here, and then I want to share with you something that is just really made me think. It deals with the type of warfare that we're engaging in. But before I get to that story, the Supreme Court, you know, big story, Texas heartbeat bill. Right? A lot of people have been following this story. Well, Supreme Court Justice Sam Alito, he defended the court from criticism over its decision to allow the Texas heartbeat bill to go forward. He said the court has been accused of having what's called, you know, a shadow docket or an agenda that's not available to the public. They were even accused of it by Justice Elena Kagan. But he gave this speech at Notre Dame University. And Justice Alito, he said that the media has been perpetuating a view that is, I'm going to quote him here, quote, a dangerous cabal is deciding important issues in a novel, secretive, improper way in the middle of the night, hidden from public view. That's what he says. That's what the media has been perpetuating, right? He said he rejected it outright. He says this is false. It's inflammatory. It's a claim that they claim that we nullified Roe v. Wade. He says it's not the shadow docket, but the emergency docket. It's something that's been a feature of the court for many, many years. And, we have seen the court come under greater scrutiny in recent days. And, of course, Roe will fall. We've got the Dobbs case coming up in December. And I heard Father Rocky mentioning, we probably won't get their decision till June, probably right before they go on recess, right? But then, boy, things get wild, don't they? They get wild. Father Rocky's been praying the rosary for an end to the culture of death, for an end to abortion in this country. And I would invite you to do it. Let's pray. Let's fast. We're going to win this battle. The more we pray, the more we fast, the better things are going to go, the faster that the culture of death will be defeated. And you can join Father, as I've been saying, at 7 p.m. for the rosary as well. I saw a story, and I thought of former colleague of mine here at the network, Monsignor Swetland. He served our military. He's a great, he's a great mind, very moral, and he's going to be stopping by in just a second here. I was thinking about that drone strike, right, that took place in Afghanistan. In August, as all those people were being evacuated from the Kabul airport, U.S. government they launched a drone strike on what was supposed to be, a car full of terrorists, loading explosives in the back. It turned out that the occupants were just a, regular family, was not terrorists. They were loading water in the trunk of this car. And the drone, with the authorization of the military, of humans who were watching what was going on through the drone camera, cost 10 people their lives. And they were innocent. And if that kind of mistake could be made while a human is operating the machine, right? What might happen if these machines become autonomous? And this is what made me think. It's something almost out of the movies, right? Something out of science fiction. Back in June, NPR reported that the UN thinks this actually might have happened in Libya. There was a story there. The UN said that in an autonomous flying drone, otherwise known as a lethal autonomous weapon system. They call it LAWS, L-A-W-S, a lethal autonomous weapon system. It was used in March of last year in a skirmish. Now, they don't know if anyone was killed by this drone. If that did happen, it would mark the first time that a self-guided machine killed a human being. And it would mark, really, an epochal change in the history of human warfare. This is coming. Robots, drones, hypersonic missiles. I mean, take a look at where we are and look at how technology is accelerating this. It's not just flying drones that are concerned. Boston Scientific keeps showing us the alpha humanoid robots. And they can do all sorts of things. Have you ever seen these things? They're weird. They're kind of creepy. They can do backflips, right? They can do synchronized dancing. Creepy is the word for it. Hard to imagine arming these things. You know, Patrick, my producer today, was saying to me, reminds me of the Terminator. Well, maybe this is the first step in the development of future Terminators. Here to give us some perspective on it, it's Monsignor Stuart Swetland, president of Donnelly College in Kansas City, Kansas. Of course, he's the executive secretary for the Fellowship of Catholic Scholars and a longtime contributor here at Relevant Radio. Hey, Monsignor, good to talk with you. Thank you for your time.
It's good to be with you, Drew. Thank you.
Always good to talk with you. And I appreciate, as I said, your theology, your morality, your expertise. You know, one commentator was saying, I saw reports that these kind of weapons could potentially be more disruptive than even nuclear weapons. What do you make of that statement, and how do you read that?
Well, in a way, yes, because almost anything can be carried on these delivery vehicles. And you can imagine how destabilizing it might be if you had autonomous weaponry. So what happened in March? This happened. It's a Turkish vehicle, the Cargo 2, and it's a little one. It only weighs about 16 pounds. It has four rotors on it, and they launched it in Libya in the ongoing conflict there between the government and some insurgent forces, and they launched it with it pre-programmed to attack the supply vehicles of the retreating forces of the insurgents. But it took no human intervention once launched. So it's a fire and forget and find. It's fired and you can forget about it. It goes looking. It's pre-programmed with artificial intelligence to go look for what you've programmed it to attack, and it attacks it. Now, these ones aren't that big. They have explosives inside of them, and they explode close to the target. So it becomes like a moving landmine in that sense. But the danger, of course, with these is they're talking about, they're very close to being able to put in facial recognition into these. And so you could launch a drone to go looking for your enemy. You can imagine how these might be used in criminal activities. But what really is destabilizing is a swarm of such things that would just be incredibly devastating. Imagine what the people behind 9/11 could have done if they were given time to amass these autonomous vehicles that they could launch, forget about them, and they would just attack whatever they programmed to attack. So this is why this particular type of weaponry, much like poison gas, biological weapons, needs to be controlled. I think we should never allow totally autonomous attack vehicles to be produced and distributed. Now, Turkey's very proud. If you read the Turkish press on this, they're very proud of their technological acumen in this area. They are one of the leaders in the world on this. It's a big industry. Yep. Israel has this technology. Obviously, we do too. We don't talk a whole lot about it in our country. But this is an increasing capacity. And you're talking about something 15, 16 pounds. Every soldier could carry one of these.
Yeah, no doubt. What happens when something goes wrong? Say a robot, ends up taking out a bunch of civilians. I mean, who's liable for that? We just saw that drone attack in Afghanistan take 10 innocent lives, but this is an algorithm. This is code that drives these things, I'm assuming. So if they were independent like that, who's responsible for it? I guess the nation that put these things into motion?
Well, this is one of the huge problems, is when a individual soldier or a company of soldiers or a command does something immoral, when they choose to violate the laws of armed conflict, or when they're reckless and create unnecessary damage, collateral damage, whatever you want to call it, they can be held accountable. And they should be held accountable. That's part of the laws of armed conflict. Obviously, with these autonomous machines, you really don't have much possibility of holding people accountable. You know, you can imagine sometime when people enter into lawsuits against manufacturers, but that hasn't gone very far in the gun manufacturers world and all that. So this is one of the problems that these kind of weapons proposes to us.
I'm curious as to look, you served the military. Technology is an awesome thing. And again, if it's used for good, goods are multiplied, right? If it's used for evil, we see what that brings about. Evils can be multiplied. Great not to have boots on the ground, right? This technology is awesome, but there's a kid sitting in California with a joystick in his hand, and he can drop a bomb down somebody's chimney 8,000 miles away. I mean, it's crazy where we've come right now. And if the future is drones and hypersonic missiles, and it is robots doing the fighting, what do you see for the future? I mean, we'll never see a World War One or a World War Two the way we did in times past because of technology, right? You even have automated subs and other type of crafts. I mean, paint for me a picture, or unfold for us if you could. Maybe, what do you see the future warfare looking like if for some reason China and the U.S. or Russia or North Korea or anybody ever got into it?
Well, I personally think that what could happen with this new type of weaponry is it would render obsolete some of the large military, equipment that we currently have. Can you imagine things like tanks or on sea, an aircraft carrier or frigate or destroyer,
right,
cruiser? You know, they could be easily inundated and destroyed with a swarm of these types. And we're not even talking about nanotechnology,
right,
which is also on the cutting edge, that could attack and destroy. It might render obsolete some of the things we've come to depend upon in keeping the balance of power. And this kind of asymmetric ability for very inexpensively to render obsolete multi-billion dollar systems would create, I think, huge instabilities. Now, perhaps it would also bring us to our senses about how we control the use of deadly force between nations, and we would be willing to, think more more ethically about this.
Yeah, I know you served in the Navy, right? I think, man,
yes.
What a sitting target they are for hypersonic missile, a drone, anything. I mean, how easy can you take out an aircraft carrier or a ship at sea today? So warfare is really changing.
I was just...
Go ahead.
Right. I was just back from my 40th reunion at the Naval Academy. I feel very old, by the way. but the... I'm proud to say that the chaplain at the Naval Academy, head Catholic chaplain at the Naval Academy, is one of my former students, so that makes me feel
awesome.
Feel good. I've kind of replaced myself. But
So, Monsignor, would the size of our armies change? I mean, would we need to have such a robust military if technology can serve it? I mean, we're going to have,
Well, that's what I was going to say. We already have incidences. There's been a little bit in the press, not a whole lot, but we already have instances where ships off the West Coast have been, buzzed and even sometimes as many as I understand, one ship had like 10 instances where drones, unauthorized drones, buzzed them or came close to them. And you wonder if that's not someone testing something out. I do think these kind of technology could be very destabilizing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I only have a moment or two left. In terms of the morality of all this, I certainly hope that we have leaders that use some sort of, some sort of moral yardstick, if you will, or have some sort of criteria there that they'll make sure they never cross. But then you look at people like, or nations like North Korea or China or somebody else that might have a different set of ethics or codes.
Right. Look where this was used. It was used. It's Turkish technology used in Libya between the government of Libya and an insurgent group. Right. That's where it was first used. It wasn't used China, U.S., Russia. So, you know, this is where the destabilizing comes in.
Yeah. Well, essentially, we'll watch it. We'll continue to see what ultimately happens. Thank you for being here. Before we go, let's put a quick plug in for Donnelly College. School probably just started, right? How are things going?
Oh, it's going great. I was proud to see we were named by the National Catholic Register as one of the top 40 Catholic colleges in the country. And, you know, we are again, U.S. News and Report, we're the most diverse college in the entire Midwest. So
wow.
I joke with people, you think diversity, think Kansas, because we have a wonderfully diverse student body. But we're able to do good things. And, you know, as far as on this issue, Drew, I just want to remind everybody, the just war tradition, which came out of the Catholic intellectual tradition, which is part of U.S. treaty and law, mm-hmm. our military is bound to follow just war theory. So is the rest of the world, all that signed the U.N. Charter.
Right.
That incorporates a lot of just war thinking. So as long as we use those moral tools we have, we can handle this issue.
Monsignor, thank you. Keep up your wonderful work. You can check out Donnelly College. Is it donnelly.edu? Is that the best way to connect?
Correct, donnelly.edu.
Check it out. Great, great institution. My thanks to Monsignor Stuart Sweatland. Stay with me. Short pause. We'll be back. We got a lot to get into today. Look forward to talking with you.
Now, as I fast approach 40 years in and around the financial arena, I find myself truly petrified socially, politically, and economically to the point of taking drastic actions for my own personal finances. As I record this, for the first time in decades, my personal cash position is larger than my general portfolio holdings. It's my goal to continue to raise cash through year's end, on the belief we're on the threshold of an economic, social, and political living nightmare that will, in the end, make the Great Depression look like a walk in the park.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Wow. It's haunting is perhaps the best description of that. That was, of course, Peter Grandage. He's going to be joining me in just a moment. You heard him. He's taking drastic actions on his own personal finance. And I'll come right out up front and I'll say, I hope he's wrong. I hope he is so wrong. I hope this guy is so off target. It's ridiculous, right? But Peter's been pretty accurate. I know you know him. He's been a regular contributor. He joins me about twice a month on the program just to give us an update on where we are as a nation, where the economy's going, how the markets are performing, taking a look at a lot of different issues. And, of course, you're always welcome to tap into his expertise and his genius. Let me give you the number to do that, because we'll talk to him in a second. The number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You know, I don't think he's wrong in this respect. If we continue to go down this path where, one, we have rejected God, and we look towards big government for all the answers, for all the solutions. And then we see what the policies of big government can bring about. You know, we're looking at $28 trillion in national debt right now and ticking. It's going up, right? We're closing in on that $30 trillion mark. And if something happens on Capitol Hill and we see that $3.5 or that $1.2 trillion go through, that is a lot of dollars. That's a lot of dollars. Of course, Peter Grandage, that was his latest podcast you heard. It was called My Most Dire Commentary Ever. And most of you know that, look, he doesn't have the brightest outlook on the economy. I say that all the time. And Peter's view is he's reading the signs. The Lord has nothing good to say about debt, right? And it seems like we're getting mired in it. You know, his outlook, though, I think has grown a little darker. I always try to light a candle, always try to have some hope. Not here to scare anybody. I also think we need to be honest and just see where we are, because it's possible to turn the ship around. You know, sometimes it takes a long time to redirect that ship. But I think we can do it, hopefully. But if we continue to go down this path, boy, I don't know. It's a little wonder. You know, first-time unemployment, I was looking at those numbers. First-time unemployment rose by 11,000 last week. It's up to now 362,000. That's happening even when nearly 11 million job openings are available around the country right now. 11 million job openings. All right, openings. That comes not from me, not from some news. That comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. 11 million job openings. Government barely avoided a shutdown by Congress passing a Band-Aid bill, a funding bill that goes through December 3rd. It's doubtful that they'll be able to get the real funding bill in place by then either. So we'll see. I think it's just a delay tactic. But the Republicans, they actually prevented a bill to lift the debt ceiling from going forward. And I'm delighted. I don't think debt is a good thing. That has a number of people worried that our country may not be able to pay its bills in a couple weeks. In fact, the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, she's called on Congress to get rid of the debt ceiling altogether, citing, you know, this constant fight in Congress when the limit's been raised. I don't know if that's a great idea. I want to ask Peter about that one because I do think we need some constraints. Imagine no debt ceiling. Can you imagine where that could go? Here's her rationale. Right? Here's why she said that. It's her view, or in her estimation, it's better not to have it than for this annual battle over raising it, you know, to take place all the time. We see this threat for the shutdown over and over again. But the other thing, too, and this is one that really concerns me more than anything else, it's inflation. Just today, the Federal Reserve, they reported that the core inflation rate, which, by the way, that excludes fuel prices and food, right? It reached a level we have not seen in decades, 30 years. What were you doing 30 years ago? Think about how different the economy, you know, has been over the arc of that time. When you put food and you put fuel back into the prices rose in August 0.4% for the month, 4.3% year over year, the highest hike since January of 91. So in other words, inflation is still happening, even though the Fed said that, you know, what you're seeing, you know, at the beginning of the year, it's just short term. They didn't expect it to be much. And again, I'm not here to bring it down. We're looking at the numbers, and I mean, look, you're concerned about your future. I'm concerned about my future, right? It's why trusting God is so important when you hear this type of conversation, right? More than ever, the need to pray and to trust and know God can provide and will take care of you. It's important. I think we also have to be good stewards. We can't be foolish. You can't go blindly down a path towards your own destruction either, right? We need to take the right steps to make sure that we're aware of what is coming around that bend and possibly avoid a future danger. That's why I've invited Peter Grandage to join me. He is the former Wall Street whiz kid, as he likes to call himself. And you can check out his story by going to Relevant Radio or just do a search for his book. The book's called Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid. It's highly endorsed. And it tells his incredible journey of how his Catholic faith ultimately led to a profound and true Christian conversion. And he's been doing a lot of other media, right? Secular media where, you know, when he talks about God or debt or things along those lines, you know, so often it's not always appreciated. But I always try to give you an honest look at life, and Peter's here to help you. If you want to check him out, petergrandage.com, petergrandage.com. You can also join me at 888-914-9149. Hey, Peter, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I got to tell you, when you played the music with my podcast, it even scared me.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of ominous, to be honest with you, Peter. I'm thinking, oh, man, where's that cup of hemlock I need to drink? I mean, it's like, come on. You really are concerned. I mean, you've been on the air. You've been on with me for months, you know, reading these signs. But, I mean, more than ever, it seems like things are accelerating.
Yeah, so to take a step back, understand I'm fast approaching 40 years at this. So it's been quite a while. And while I've had concerns, I would never say that I've been a roaring bull for 40 years. That's the furthest from the truth. But I've always found areas and sectors to try to make capital appreciation on, and have done fairly well at that. You know, even if I was out of the market, I found places and things that performed as well, if not better, mm-hmm. for me. And though, you know, clients when I had them, and now I still just provide it as an individual. But it got to the point now where there was no more. I mean, there's really just one. And I'm not here, and I don't want to start talking about what people should invest in. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure that my longtime friends, clients still of our planning group and all understood that this would be the first time since 1987 that I would have more cash than anything else. And that's how concerned that I got. And why I say 87 and just plug is that's where it really started for me. I wasn't even in the business 3 years. I was head of made of investment strategy. I put out a forecast of a crash to sell everything. The firm I worked for told me to retract it or resign. I didn't. October came, and then the day after that crash, I said that the market would go back and make a new high in 2 years. And that was the birth of the Wall Street Whiz Kid. And by the way, the Wall Street Whiz Kid moniker was not created by me. It was actually created by a man named Steve Crowley, who was the ABC's Good Morning America business editor, and who did a story about, you know, this kid without a high school education forecasting a crash at the time. And at that point in time, many people didn't think we'd even recover from that. So things are so much worse off socially, politically, and economically. And as you and I were talking before we went on air, the biggest cause, which when I was recently on a secular show, when they asked me, hey, Mr. Grant, at the end of the day, we get to the bottom, what is the cause of all this? And my answer was, well, we moved away from God. And they looked at me profound because it was a secular financial show. And when we went off the air, the guy says, you're right, we just can't say that here. And I said, too bad God doesn't have, you know, areas where it works. He covers the whole world. So anyway, basically, I am petrified. I am really concerned. I'm not interested in the next day, week, or month. I'm looking at a decade or more. I'm looking for my one and only child. She's 29. You know, I want her to understand that we basically flipped 180 degrees in the 40 years I was doing this. And let me just take a minute, if I can, Drew. When I started, early 1980s, we had less than $1 trillion in debt. Our GDP to debt ratio was 30%. Now it's like 135%. Interest rates were 20%. I find it hard because I was just in the bank the other day and they were thrilled to give me 0.1% on my savings account. And I said to the lady, I said, listen, I remember getting CDs at 15, 16, and 17%. And you gave us a toaster.
Wow.
But, we've turned all around. We've gone 180 degrees. The biggest issue, and again, I go back to it, Drew, I think as long as I've known you, I tried to build my foundation on how I handle my finances just as I try to do my personal Catholic Christian life based on teachings. And in Scripture, there is not one positive word about debt. In fact, God speaks more about the dangers of debt and finances in general than he does even heaven and hell, okay? So if Almighty God doesn't think it's good, and that's all I see where we're heading, both as a nation, both as corporations, as individuals, I still see 7 to 8 out of 10 families at all levels of income living at least one lifestyle or more above where their finances truly support. Mm-hmm. And most of that is because they're borrowing against the future in some way, shape, or form. So it's got to the point where I just said, I can't find any real value anymore. There doesn't seem to be anything to really put or any place to park and hope that you can make a lot of capital appreciation. And with that in mind, I think cash is going to be an important thing because if I'm right, and like you said, you hope I'm wrong, and in a sense for the world, I hope I'm wrong, but I have a feeling, and I feel I'm being led. I think it's going to be an important thing for us to do, and everywhere I look, socially, politically, and economically, I see things getting worse, not better. So I just don't see any reason why I need to be a big player and put capital at risk at this point in time.
Yeah. My guest today, Peter Granich. And when we come back, we'll grab your calls. I only have them for a few moments. You want to sound off, or if you've got a concern or an insight you want to share, good time to get in. 888-914-9149. We're back right after this. Also, don't forget the chaplet's coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll pray for our country. We'll pray for your finances. And let's pray for our leadership as well. Tell somebody else about the prayer, too. It'd be great to pray with them. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Your life, your money, connected.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Money!
Yeah, I hope you're a good steward of your money. Thank you for, of course, supporting Relevant Radio. I mean, we're listeners supported, and so many of you, I know, heroically sacrifice. I also believe you can't outgive God, and we can't live in fear either. Yeah, if, you know, we've got to make prudent and informed decisions. If you want to read another book, my guest today is Peter Grandis. He wrote that book, The Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid. But I was listening to my headsets during the break, and I remember, that's right, he wrote the book, Seven Deadly Sins of Finance. And that's online, too. You can read that, I think, for free. Peter, Seven Deadly Sins of Finance, how do people get that? Or how do they get plugged into it?
They can read it for free right on our website, petergrandis.com, and just scroll down to where it says suggested readings. They can read all our booklets and the book itself online for free.
And if you want to talk to Peter, you can always email him on that site, too. His email is there. Vinny in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Mr. Grandage.
Hi, Peter. How are you? It's good to talk to you again.
Nice to speak to you. My question is this.
It's actually two. One, are energy stocks like Exxon safe, or do you think they'll be threatened by the electric car? And the second question is, do you think that Biden is going to usher in a Soviet-style economy?
Wow. Good question. Great question.
Well, I don't follow oil stocks, but I would say that the greening of the world is here to stay. It's one of the things that I tried to profit from by playing nuclear energy stocks, and we've had a great run in that, and I've actually sold a lot of them. I don't think oil's going to disappear overnight, but I think you'll probably start to see the major oil companies start to diversify again, simply because the handwriting's on the wall. Many of the car manufacturers are now basically going to be either putting just out electrical cars, or they're going to be the primary source, and that will be the handwriting on the wall. That's the most I could say in that. I don't follow it close enough. In terms of a Soviet style, I would say more. It's clearly there's a strong movement. We're seeing it now. Even the Democratic Party's having a problem with it from a fringe within its party that a socialist / communist like thinking has taken hold, and that's why they're battling to try to get across this bill despite having to raise a thin majority. So I certainly think we've moved closer to that than any other time in modern era. Right. Whether or not we'll get there will depend a lot of what happens in the next election. If somehow the Republicans don't take control back and we even see more socialism type Congress people winning, then we may be moving towards a true socialist type country, and God forbid us for that, but that's where we may head.
Yeah, it's a failed ideology. Hey, Vinny,
should I
go ahead, Vinny, final thought.
Should I sell the oil stocks?
I can't tell you that. I don't give individual investment advice, sir. The only thing I will tell you, what I always tell everybody, since 30 last years, you start to consider something to sell when you couldn't bring yourself first to buy it today. So if you couldn't first buy it today, then that may give you justifiable reason to consider a serious thought of possibly selling it.
That's a great way of approaching it. And Vinny, thank you. Sorry, I've got to keep you there because we only have a few minutes. I want to sneak a few more people along. Gary's been waiting, too. He's listening in Sanger, California. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Drew. I email you occasionally. This tactic by the Democrats is used always, is raise the debt ceiling and we'll be able to pay the bills. But it's a lie. What happens when the government shuts down? Taxes still keep on coming to the tune of many billions of dollars. And the first obligation constitutionally is the debt. They are obligated to pay about 10% of what comes in with the taxes, so they have more than enough to maintain the debt. Then comes Medicare and Social Security, and then Medicare and Medicaid, and we have more than enough each month to pay for that. But they don't want to then pick and choose on the next items down the line in their program. So they are lying to us, and so many of us just swallow it like suckers.
Hey, Gary, thank you. And let me follow up on that. You know, he's laying out the case for the maintenance of this incredibly growing debt. What do you see happening in the future, and also our obligation to make sure that we get a bridle on that?
Okay, so we're basically at $30 trillion. So think about this, Drew. On one hand, they tell us, well, we're going to return to normal, interest rates will rise again, and things will be hunky-dory. So mm-hmm. let's just say they go back to 5%. 5% was considered very low interest rate not too long ago. Okay. So at $30 trillion, that would mean we'd have a $1.5 trillion interest payment,
wow.
okay, on the debt, if the debt doesn't get lowered. And we know it only keeps going higher. And by the way, the gentleman is partly right on something. The Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security is not accounted in that debt, even though it's a future obligation of the government. So in 2019, because we can't count, 2020, we took in a little over $3 trillion in tax revenue. Mm-hmm. So at that rate, that means half of the interest payments will come just to pay the current debt.
Wow.
No principal payment, no payment for anything else, okay? And don't forget, Drew, states and cities, they don't have printing presses like the United States government. They have to basically try to balance their budget, or else you have to do two things. You have to raise taxes and lower services. So when you see that in corporations levels high, I continue to see individuals that we meet with just incurring more and more debt, especially as interest rates went so low. And then I turn to Scripture, and I see nothing but warnings from both the Old Testament right through the New Testament about where problems are going to arise because of debt. So do we want to listen to the world, or do we want to listen to the greatest teacher that ever walked on the earth? And so I just, I've hopped on for years about get out of debt or reduce debt, and less is more. And whether or not the market was at 40,000 or 5,000, I would say that no matter what.
All right, let's move along. We'll go to Gary, listening in San Bernardino, California. Hi, Gary. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. God bless you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Bless you.
I had a question. Thank you. I'll take it. I had a question regarding good debt. Since we're seeing inflation on a level that we've not experienced for a manufacturing company. Since dollar values are dropping, is there good debt out there that, let's say for non-essential items, that we should be engaging in and pay it off with inflated dollars?
Well, debt also is a personal view, how people look at it. It is a need in a capitalist society, so it's not to say that there should never be any debt by anybody. The problem is it debt for a cause, or is it debt for a lifestyle? And we've grown our lifestyle a lot bigger than what our income has been, whether it's on the corporate side or individual side. So those are individual decision makings, but you do point out the most likely solution eventually to how they will have to approach this budgeting deficit, and that is they are going to allow inflation to go higher and use cheaper dollars to hopefully pay down some of the debt. But some of this debt will eventually have to be reorganized as well. And it's not just in the United States. It's across the border world. We're not the only country facing a serious debt issue.
All right. Gary, thanks. Good. I'll let you follow up. You only got 30 seconds, though.
I just see them, the government spending like crazy. And intentionally to tank the dollar and tank the economy, blame the capitalists and capitalism, and install a Marxist regime.
I think there's some insight there, Gary. Thank you. My guest, Peter Grandage. Check him out at his website, petergrandage.com. That's Peter Grandage, GRANDICH.com. You can read his book, The Seven Deadly Sins of Finance. I think you'll be glad you did, or Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whizkid. Peter, thank you. I appreciate
thank you
being
Drew.
Here. God bless you, brother. All right, we'll pray the chaplet when I return. Stay with me.